What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of Blockhash Exploring the Blockchain. Quick message from our sponsors, BNFT and Nitro Betting. BNFT is a groundbreaking platform that combines the unstoppable force of blockchain technology and the limitless potential of artificial intelligence to revolutionize.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Personalized learning and earning experiences. BNFT leverages AI to create immersive educational environments for collaboration and utilizes DeFi to transcend traditional e-learning experiences. You can also earn exclusive certificates and showcase your achievements with unique NFTs. You can learn more by going to bnft.solutions and their social media channels. Nitro Betting is a top Bitcoin and crypto betting site that allows you to place bets in casino games, sports books, racing, gaming, you name it. It's your money. You should be able to have fun with it too outside of traditional investing. So check out all the action at nitrobetting.eu. All links are in the description below. Enjoy the episode, guys. What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of Blockhash Exploring the Blockchain, episode 353. Back again for part three, we have Seth Hicks with Private Banking Strategies here to talk about those strategies and how they may apply to crypto, preserving and saving your wealth and privacy strategies. Seth, welcome back to the show, man. How you doing? How's your summer?
Hey, thanks, Brandon. Awesome, man. You can probably see I got a little sun on my face. I can see the beach in Southern California and out in the sun a little bit too much and had my sunglasses on. I've got the raccoon face like you went skiing.
That's awesome. I've gotten out a little bit too. I went to Cartagena a few weeks back, actually about a month ago, and got some sun too. Surprisingly, it didn't burn. I'm white as hell, and I thought that I was going to like turn into a lobster, but I survived. Thank goodness. But it's nice to get out, touch some grass every once in a while.
Yeah, I forgot to put on the sunblock, man, and I did. I got roasted, man. I got blistered pretty good on the shoulders and back. But it'll grow back, right?
Yeah, it'll come back. Want to throw up the U.S. national debt clock rule here since you sent it over to me. It is wild how high the national debt is. I think it's currently sitting at almost $33 trillion. And credit card debt is over $1 trillion now. Student loans are in a crisis. I think housing is entering another crisis. It's across the board, it's an absolute disaster. Curious what your thoughts are on this, and is this sustainable? Like, can we keep going in this direction in the U.S.? Like, I feel like something's going to break pretty soon.
Absolutely, and you hit the nail on the head. You can't. This is not a sustainable curve. It's become parabolic at this point. I believe you and pointed out before we started recording just the rapid multiplication of the national debt, probably doubled in a decade. And I believe when Bush came in, we were to office the Bush Jr. in the early 2000s, we were in single digit trillions. So it's rapidly and parabolically increasing, and doesn't need to be said, but that obviously devalues your dollar and your purchasing power. And people have seen that at the gas pumps, at the grocery stores, in housing property. For example, when I was in law school, I went to Pepperdine in Malibu, and there were some great palatial estates. I graduated in 1998, so I was there in the mid 90s. And these palatial estates would be 10 million, 15 million. I had a friend, his family was the caretaker for Brad Pitt and Jennifer Aniston at the time of a property in Malibu that had like awesome estate style property, private. It was worth about $20 million at that time. Those type of properties now are have 10x'd. I mean, it's $200 million for that property. And you look around and just the dollar doesn't purchase near of what it did even a decade ago, yet alone 2 decades or 3 decades ago. And so it's not sustainable, as we all know. The question is, what do you do? How do you protect yourself? You know, and sometimes people start making more money and it gives them a false sense of security. Like they've got, you know, they're thinking that the 3 times the money they were making a decade ago actually has 3 times the purchasing power, which it doesn't. It probably has half the purchasing power. So there are absolute ways to protect yourself. And I think most of our audience that's in crypto, the type of protection, you know, is diversifying, having crypto, having perhaps metals, other hard assets that are going to appreciate at the same or greater type of growth.
Yeah, I want to talk about some of those options, you know, what strategies might be out there for people, because this the national debt looks so unsustainable at this point. I don't think it's ever going to get paid down. It's ever going to get rectified any kind of way. So, you know, the best thing that people can learn to do is prepare themselves accordingly and protect their money and learn to have a little bit of sovereignty over it, privacy over it, and learn some of those methods. And also in pertaining to crypto too, you know, are there avenues where people can utilize crypto and potentially also protect their money, hold it privately? Obviously, I know it was one of them. But is there some strategies there that maybe you've pondered and explored?
Absolutely, there sure are. We touched on this a bit in the last recording about where you purchase and where you liquidate your crypto. And this gets off into places where we have to kind of analyze people's conceptual ideas and obligations with the IRS. And most people have been brainwashed to think that that they've got to comply with every notice of the IRS sends and so on and so forth. And we've discussed that a little bit, but I would invite people to really investigate what the law holds. And here's a primary question is, show me the law that pertains to the payment of taxes as a citizen. And who is a citizen of the U.S.? Is it a person of every state? And this might be a red pill for a lot of folks, but a citizen is defined in the Internal Revenue Code as a resident of the District of Columbia, which is Washington, D.C., or other territories outside the contiguous U.S. So there are avenues where, like, I think that you can effectively maintain privacy in your purchases and liquidations of crypto, and how you handle the reporting of those is really up to your knowledge, your understanding of the law. And so we're not giving anybody advice on any specific situation, because we don't know their specific situation, but I would encourage people to choose carefully where they purchase and where they sell. We have brokerages with and relationships with certain boutiques that are maintain financial privacy. I mean, most people probably know that Coinbase was subpoenaed by the IRS, and they effectively negotiated the disclosure of their client base above a certain threshold, which is pretty low. It's like $20,000, I believe. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's an invasion of your privacy to the nth degree. And people are in crypto because they want to maintain privacy. And that's another common attribute with private banking strategies, is that the way that we bank our fiat and the way that we protect those cash assets are also financially private. Insurance companies don't raise their hand and file any forms or report to the government when you've got ins and outs. And in fact, this is one of the cool things about private banking strategies, is that once your money is in that system, that structure, which we use a supercharged whole life insurance policy, it is actually exempted in the Internal Revenue Code. It's Section 7702. If folks want to look that up, so Internal Revenue Code 7702, which actually exempts and carves out the growth, the ins and outs of the money into the in the private banking system. So they don't have to report anything, and you don't have to disclose anything because there's no taxable event. So that's one of the good things about that. And it's also asset protected, unlike banks, which we discuss some as well with bank failures and dominoing things and insolvency with banks. Where would you want to put your cash? You know, some people taking it out, putting it under their mattress. There's been bank runs, and some people get left with no chair to sit in when the music stops. But you can also have it in, you know, you don't have to have it under your mattress or buried in treasure chest. You can actually keep it in your private banking system, where it is totally liquid, completely accessible, and free from taking, free from insolvency. So,
yeah, I think the problem is just holding cash in the bank, period. I mean, the FDIC only has a certain amount of money, like I think like $24 billion or so. Right. To cover what, 20 trillion in American deposits in total, right, that are in the US banks. Like, that threshold is so low.
It's if less have, than a penny.
Yeah, if you have a crisis even close to what we had like this spring, you know, then that's when problems come in. The FDIC can't actually insure all those accounts. Right. So why would you hold your dollar in the bank? You know, aside from the fact that there's inflation, your dollar is becoming less all the time. The right. bank's loaning it out. It's not actually there. Now it's not actually insured. You know, holding a dollar is way more riskier than actually holding an asset at this point.
Absolutely. I mean, you hit the nail on the head very succinctly. Your bank could be the villain who scoops in all your cash to maintain solvency. And that comes through the Dodd-Frank Act. And it gives them the right to effectively take depositors' money to shore up their solvency. And then the next level of arguments, people go, well, what about the FDIC? I don't have $250,000 in there. I'm safe. You're not, for the very reason you just pointed out. There's, you know, 20 trillion in deposits, and we're using rough numbers. And let's say that even on the best day, that the FDIC is worth 100 billion. 20 trillion versus 100 billion.
Not even comparable.
Not even close. I mean, you don't even have a penny's worth of insurance on those dollars. So if you've got multiple institutions failing like dominoes, the FDIC can't shore up all that money. They may shore up the first one or the second one. You know, it'd be better to be in one of the first banks that fails if you're counting on FDIC insurance. But if you actually think through it, just like you said, man, there are other assets that are going to hold value, keep pace with inflation. And for example, I mean, some people hate on the metals, but metals for thousands of years have held value. I mean, you know, 50 years ago, you could buy a very fine suit for an ounce of gold. Same thing today. For an ounce of gold, you can buy a very fine suit, $2,000 or $200. It's the same trade exchange. So I believe in hedging with metals, but I'm also a big believer in crypto for all the same reasons we've highlighted. I also believe in real estate, certain types of real estate. Those are three major asset classes, I think, that people should consider to diversify. And then we have some, you know, particular strategies that are somewhat proprietary that we utilize with the private banks that we set up to acquire other assets, such that your own bank is actually lending funds to a purchasing entity in an arm's length transaction. That means the parties are not the same. They're separate parties. It's an arm's length transaction. And the bank actually collateralizes and secures its investment to that in that asset with liens, so that the lender, your private family bank, has first rights, effectively lien rights on the asset class. And that's very important for numerous reasons. But for the main, you know, reason is it's an asset protection.
If someone came to you and they said, I have a few real estate properties, I have maybe six figures in crypto or six figures in metal, and they want to set up a structure, what does that process kind of look like that you would take someone through, and what does a structure kind of look like? Does it consist of setting up like corporate structures? Is it, you know, setting up with a boutique brokerage like you mentioned before, or a private banking partner, or a combination of those things? Or do you have to tailor it to the individual or the company? Well, give us like a little bit of like an idea of how that kind of gets set up.
Yeah, that's a great question, Brandon. It is definitely narrowly tailored, that is specific to a particular family office or a particular family that has particular goals. So there's a general strategy, but it's kind of like surgery. I mean, you're going to go in with scalpels and actually tailor the structure to the person's particular or the family's particular needs. So for example, let me kind of give you a hypothetical example. We've got multiple clients that are heavy in real estate, and they have they have cash surplus. And so they fund their private banking entity, which is a separate entity that we structure with the capital to acquire, expand, restructure other debt, any one of those things or other things, to utilize their cash instead of leaving it out in the open, subject to risk. And so that bank effectively finances, let's say, a new acquisition, a new apartment building, a new raw land development structure. And that purchasing entity generally is an LLC. So it may incorporate the formation of LLC or multiple LLCs, one that might manage an operation, one that might own an operation, and their banking entity, which is a separate entity, finances those transactions and collateralizes the loan with with securitized liens. And on the flip side of that, I mean, the borrowing entities, you know, they have to pay back the loans, and there's a cycle, there's a velocity of money there. That's one of the seven pillars of private banking strategies that we talk about some, and where it gives you multiple touches on the same dollar. You funded your bank with a dollar. The dollar is utilized to acquire other assets. That asset produces income. That income flows back into the bank with a profit and a delta. And then it's just completely cycled through again. So back to the question at hand is narrowly tailored, focused on particular needs and interests, but the general strategies are like I described. Now, that same formula will apply with crypto purchases. We may form a bank. That bank capitalizes an entity which purchases crypto, likewise, I mean, some folks are staking, you know, so I've got clients that like HBARC, Theta, T-Fuel, and for the staking aspects, and others as well. And so they've got that built into the plan, and their debt service includes liquidating stakes at certain interim places, or in some other times they have cash flow that they service the debt themselves, and they let the stakes acquire because they're waiting for the right price target, you know, and that can effectively, you can get a 10, 20, 30, 50, sometimes 100x on some of these stakes that are, you know, that are rolling out things at low price points that appreciate in the future, that's really exciting. And I think so that's another aspect or another way that you can overlay the strategy.
Are these things jurisdictionally within the United States still, or are they taking advantage sometimes of other countries or territories outside the U.S.?
Yeah, it's primarily the private banking strategies is a U.S. structure. However, we do have some high net worth individuals in various countries that have a nexus to the United States, meaning they have business in the United States, they have property that they own in the United States, they have business partners in the United States, which they can have an insurable interest on their business partner's life, like a key man policy. If their business partner happens to pass, they need to replace that person. And so they have, you know, high cash value insurance policies on a key man. That gives them the ability to fund their structures in the U.S., take advantages of the laws like we described with Internal Revenue Code 7702 and a tax-free economy there, and utilize that same thing. But those are generally higher net worth folks and people that have business interest, property, or other nexus to the United States that they can show those type of things, because premiums need to be paid into your bank through U.S. banks. But I've also had clients that didn't have those things, but they were high net worth. So they come and they buy a vacation home in Florida, and they open up bank accounts in Florida, and they start this structure, and they're an international, but yet they've got the ability to do that because of the nexus and their high net worth. So we can make it work for internationals, but it's the higher net worth folks. It's not a guy that's just starting at lower level. Whereas in the United States, it's effectively applicable for everybody. Some of our best testimonies are like single mom, widowed mom, five kids, starts out with like a $10,000 policy, and she's managed that over a decade into over $1 million in real estate that's cash flowing for her, and just a real success story. So we love the, rags to riches type of story, but for the internationals, it's primarily high net worth.
Hey guys, quick message from our sponsor, Nitro Betting. Nitro Betting takes your desire for anonymity seriously and allows you to play without the need to worry about identity checks and personal information. It's a betting site, not an investment site. You should be able to just have fun. As a top trusted Bitcoin betting site, Nitro Betting truly has got your back. Back to the episode, guys. Got it. I want to talk a little bit as well about taxes with crypto and maybe some potential strategies there, because I know we've chatted about that quite a bit. And what's very fascinating with crypto, especially in the US, is one, there's no legislation yet. It's not specifically in the tax code. Like, there's open letters, there's suggestions, there's what the IRS considers, what the CFTC considers, the SEC considers, what FinCEN considers. Those agencies regulate, certain parts of the US market. But for an individual that owns crypto, you get all these opinions on, what you should do with it, if it's considered X, Y, or Z, if it should be taxed like this or that, is it income? Is it a capital gain or capital loss? Is it property? Is it a security? Like, it's a nightmare. And I'm someone that's in crypto every day, and I love this industry, but when it comes to taxes around crypto, it's impossible to know what to do. Yeah. And then on top of that, there's people that have owned crypto for many, many years. There's people that, make crypto as a form of income. They get paid in crypto. They get crypto airdrops that stake their crypto and earn more in the form of like a dividend. There's a million different ways to accumulate it, to buy it, sell it, trade it, whatnot. And then at the end of the day, when it comes down to taxes and the IRS, it's impossible to know what to do. And the IRS, they're always lynching somebody and holding them up and being like, this is John Doe, and John Doe didn't give us his money for his crypto, and if you don't do it too, we're coming after you, and we're hiring X thousand agents to the agency. But the reality is they don't have the tools. They don't have the tech. Their technology is still probably a decade backwards. They don't understand it. What do you do if you're in that situation? You have a bunch of money, let's say, sitting in crypto, regardless of how long it's been there. Is there a strategy in place that someone could apply and implement to mitigate a lot of those taxes in regards to crypto in particular, or to, understand better what to do in that kind of a situation?
Yeah, I think so. But for most people, it is a total red pill with the Matrix reference, so to speak. So mm-hmm. You watch that movie, Neo had an option, red pill, blue pill, took the red pill, went down the rabbit hole, and his eyes were open to a total new world. Well, it's kind of like that with the Internal Revenue Code in my mind, because I think that there are options, and I think one has to educate themselves and become comfortable with the law that pertains to taxation And it really, it's more the absence or the omission of the law that applies to most people in the United States, but they don't believe that. They've been brainwashed and strong-armed, intimidated, bullied into believing that they've got to comply with these nonsensical extortions. So, I mean, that probably pokes some people the wrong way right when you hear it, because when I first went down this rabbit hole with the red pill, I thought, these folks are crazy. You know, these folks are absolutely crazy as to what they're proposing. I don't, you know, want to get blasted. You know, no one wants to go to jail for tax evasion. But the reality is, the statistics are showing that filers versus non-filers, the overwhelming majority of prosecutions come on filers because they're signing returns under penalty of perjury, that everything is teed up perfectly according to the Internal Revenue Code, which no one completely understands, not even CPAs. You go to different CPAs, you get different opinions, you get different strategies. And so it's a mess. And effectively, I mean, you can start at the top layer. What is a citizen, and who? How does that apply to the payment of taxes? And so that's kind of where we start. But as far as practical strategies, you can use like the brokerage I've talked about, we have a relationship with that doesn't have any reporting requirements because they're not U.S. domiciled. And you can effectively purchase and liquidate crypto without any financial disclosure. You've got that happens in complete privacy. And whether you decide to disclose that or not is up to you and your own understanding of the law or absence of the law as it applies to you and your own risk tolerance. So, but the overwhelming majority of prosecutions in the Internal Revenue Code come with filers, people who are signing returns under penalty of perjury, not non-filers, and they're generally not the ultra rich. In fact, there's statistics showing ultra rich non-filers are, you know, don't come under scrutiny. And there may be very many reasons for that, one of which the IRS goes after low-hanging fruit. And the people that they can absolutely win on, they know they've got them on something, they filed under penalty of perjury, and it's kind of like a layup. They don't go after high hard cases. They don't go after mm-hmm. folks that have tons of cash. I mean, you may recall, maybe you don't recall, but I recall when Trump was debating Hillary Clinton, and she goes, he doesn't pay his taxes. And he says, I don't pay taxes because I'm smart.
Yeah, I remember that.
That's his reply. You know, I don't pay taxes because I'm smart. You know, more $10 billion, I don't pay taxes. And people kind of shake their head and they go, how is that possible? It is possible because he is smart. And there's a lot of people out there that I think are waking up and taking that red pill, and they're seeing that it's a broken system and that tax dollars don't go to infrastructure. They don't go to the improvement of our country. They don't make one single bit of difference. And if they did, and there was a common good, people may feel differently, but you know, it's an extortion, not, more than anything, but mm-hmm. the payment is still a voluntary system. It's voluntary. And so it's a broad discussion, and we can get off in the weeds, and it'll definitely provoke people. It's a polar topic, man. Black and white, you know. But as far as crypto goes, if our audience is, if they're crypto holders, they want to trade in privacy, they can do so. There are brokerages that can do that, and we have relationships with some. They can keep their fiat in financially private storehouses and asset protected storehouses, in tax free storehouses, and it's very possible.
Yeah, and for people listening that are curious, you know, why the rich and wealthy don't pay as much in taxes, when you have that much money and you that have, you know, that much at your disposal to apply, the tax system for an ordinary person is very much a linchpin. It's something that's punishing, and it feels like they're taking advantage of you, that they're extorting you, and you know, they're just taking X amount percentage of dollars every single year out of your account. But again, when you're wealthy and you have that money, that same system evolves a bit more into an incentivization system. And that this is something I've learned from experience, because they put things deep into the tax code. All these politicians, they're always, you know, amending the tax code. They're putting in their own take on it. They're like creating opportunity zones for real estate. They're creating tax credits for energy. Like there's lots of ways where you can choose if you're wealthy enough, because you have the CPAs and accountants to find it for you and to really understand the code. You know, instead of me paying $100,000 in taxes this year because I made a lot of money, I could instead reinvest $100,000 and not pay anything in taxes.
Right.
And there's lots of options like that. Again, the whole IRS code becomes an incentivization system for people that have that kind of wealth and that kind of money, because they can afford to look into those things. And it's something that unfortunately isn't accessible to the ordinary person. One, because they don't have the know-how to find it. And two, they don't have the capital to deploy. Because oftentimes it'll say you have to invest X amount of dollars into automobiles or into houses or into land or into solar power or into XYZ neighborhoods or certain investment vehicles. And you get those write-offs, you get those credits, you get tax deferment for years down the line for capital gains. You get forgiven for certain income. So it's interesting. And I've seen both sides of that coin, and the flip side of it being very fascinating, you know, how deep that tax code goes. And it's very thick. Like I can't imagine an ordinary person ever sitting down and understanding it. But there's a lot of opportunity there too, for those that are, you know, playing around, they're in the US system, that are kind of stuck in the US system, that are trying to navigate it. Also kind of want to talk about, you know, the seven pillars that kind of make up private banking strategies. I know we've covered it before, but just from a top-down perspective, would love to cover all seven of those just briefly to remind people, you know, what those are and how they play into kind of what you do for people.
Sure. Yeah. Well, the number one pillar is asset protection. So we want you to set up structures that keep what you make. I mean, there's nothing like making something and having it fall through your hands like sand, and you wonder where your money went. Well, these structures and systems help you keep it asset protected, unlike a bank, a fiat money in a bank account, unlike, you know, other places. And it also creates a system where you're, like I said, cyclically paying your banking entity back the money that it loans for acquisitions. And so you're getting this multiple cycle. I mean, banks make a ton of money off of our deposits in fiat. I mean, and fractionalized lending, they can take a 10% reserve, and that's giving them credit. Some can even keep less on reserve. They loan out 90% of your money. You put $100,000 in, they take $90,000, they loan it out, and they make money on money that they didn't ever earn. And they keep $10,000 in reserve. So you can create your own system whereby your bank is effectively getting that cyclical payment. So asset protection is one. Tax-free growth. So we've talked on that. The thing about these structures as well, Brandon, is that you don't have to be a millionaire to set up the private banking structure. And you've got the tax-free economy and system by the Internal Revenue Code's own writing, 7702. Mm-hmm. So that money in and out, you capitalize the bank, there's no taxable event. You take the money back out, there's no taxable event. But if you put money into an IRA or 401k, you can't get it right back out. You're going to pay taxes at some point. Well, not so with the private banking structure. You don't pay taxes when you take it out. You don't pay taxes on a death benefit when the insurance policy pays on the death of the insured. It's all tax-free. So those are major differences. Financial privacy, we've touched on some, is like the insurance companies not raising their hand reporting transactions. And you've got the ability to fund and withdraw without any financial disclosure. The velocity of money, we mentioned that's pillar number four. And we've we talk about capitalizing the bank, capitalizing acquisitions or refinancing or expanding a company. And then that cash flow spinning off of from those assets comes back into the bank. Then the bank rinses and repeats with another asset, another business, another refinance, restructure. And you've got that what's called the velocity of money, getting the same dollar cycling around in your own economy. Then number five is where you never go backwards. Unlike stocks, unlike other investments which have risk, the life insurance structure that we use, it never goes backwards. It's only increasing. And the guaranteed rate of return is about 4% plus dividends. So it's about 7% or so. Then we've got, you've always got the ability to access your money. So you've got complete liquidity, is guaranteed financing. You're never going to go to a bank and have the your own bank and have the bank go, sorry, we can't loan you the money. So you've always got that complete liquidity. And then the seventh pillar is legacy value. You got tax-free transfer to your heirs. When someone passes and then there's an insurance policy on their life, that death benefit passes to the beneficiaries tax-free. So it's a tax-free system. But those are the seven pillars that are real cornerstones of this foundation. And you can find that on our website as well. And we dig into some of those and have a lot of content that drill down in those.
Absolutely. And you have other content too. You have a book, right? I think we talked about that last time on the podcast.
Yeah, we sure do. It's a free book that we offer to prospects, and it's what the banks don't want you to know. And it's on our website as well. All you do is you just put in your contact information and it becomes available to you both in a PDF version and an audio version. So you can take it on the go, listen to it as you're jogging or on a treadmill. You don't have to bother with it. So that's kind of a starting place to introduce some of these issues that get people thinking. And then if that resonates with them, they can dive into podcasts and other content and stay on the journey with us.
Are you doing other podcasts, other audio, video content at the moment with anyone else or with your own business? What are you doing in terms of vocalizing right now?
Yeah, totally. We've been doing podcasts, producing our own podcast for about 3 years. I think we probably got 60 or 70 in the can that they can all access for free right through our website. We're often guests on other folks, either in real estate industry, also into the crypto space, and some of these spaces that we've talked about that are great partnerships with private banking, like, you know, hand in glove type of relationships, and where we think that private banking strategies really shines. It shines in real estate. It shines in crypto, where you're funding your bank and then acquiring these assets, and you've got assets that spin off a return, like staking or like cash flow on real estate. So those are places. Entrepreneurs, business owners that have the ability to cycle the cash, great candidates for utilizing this structure at a premium level.
How can someone get a hold of you if they want to, you know, start the conversation, they want to figure out, you know, what needs they need to address, if they want to relay and get some ideas from you, work with you, you know, what's the best route to get in contact and set something up?
Sure. Yeah. The best way is to hit that website, man, and take a look at that red pill book, we like to call it, What the Banks Don't Want You to Know. It's a quick read, and or you can listen to it, like I said, even faster, speed it up and buzz through it. And then if that resonates with you, check out some of the podcasts, because we've got them pretty well organized, and you can start in a certain place, or if a certain title or topic resonates with you, jump in there. And if those things are resonating with you, then you can schedule an exploratory call with us. And my partner, Vance, who's been a wealth manager for over 40 years, he was managing, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars in Texas, a lot of oil and gas money. And when he found private banking strategies 20 years ago or so, and he's got a story that he tells people why he left traditional wealth management for this private banking structure and system. And it's quite a story, man, quite a journey. of what has transpired in his life. And he's got the background to explain why traditional money management is inferior to managing your own family banking system.
Awesome. Yeah, I want to meet this guy too. I haven't talked to him yet, but I've had a number of conversations with you.
Yeah, he's a great guy. We should have him on, man.
Yeah, totally. Guys, for those listening in the audience, we'll have all the links in the description for the episode below, including the website. So please go click on that to check out the book, check out the podcast, check out the website, get in contact with Seth, and find some help for what you're doing and prepare accordingly, because the world is getting crazier and crazier every single week. I can't stress that enough. So prepare accordingly, be smart. Seth, thank you for coming on the podcast again today. It's always a pleasure. We always have a really good conversation, and I think there's a lot of value here that people can take out of this.
Awesome. Yeah, thank you for having me, Brandon. Likewise, really enjoy our conversations, and hopefully bring some value to your audience that piques interest and helps them to go down some places that'll help protect them and their families.
Absolutely. Take care, Seth. We'll talk soon. Final message from our sponsor, Nitro Betting. Nitro Betting gives you so many options to bet, wager, and play with a deep sports book from NFL to NBA to NHL to MLB to MMA to motorsports to poker to blackjack to esports to Rocket League to Call of Duty. There's plenty of diversity and choice, whatever you guys want to do. So go to nitrobetting.eu to experience everything they have to offer, and see you on the next episode, guys.